From NPR News, this is News and Notes. I'm Ed Gordon. This week's visit to the Middle East by U.S. Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice has some pundits debating what was accomplished. There's no sign of a ceasefire, and Israel hasn't eased up on its two-week offensive against Hezbollah. Yesterday, during crisis talks in Rome, U.N. Secretary General Kofi Annan called for an immediate ceasefire, but Secretary Rice disagrees. She's pushing instead for a more diplomatic solution.
A ceasefire would be a false promise if it simply returns us to the status quo, allowing terrorists to launch attacks at the time and terms of their choosing, and to threaten innocent people, Arab and Israeli, throughout the region. That would be a guarantee of future violence.
As Secretary Rice wraps up her trip to the Middle East, some reports indicate she's under intense criticism, even from some Republican loyalists. Today, we'll take a closer look at Secretary Rice's pivotal trip to the Middle East and her role inside the White House. Phyllis Bennis is a new internationalism fellow at the Institute for Policy Studies in Washington, D.C. She joins us from our bureau there. And joining us via phone from Lawrence, Kansas, is author Antonia Felix. She penned a biography titled Condi, The Condoleezza Rice Story. Good to have you both with us. Ms. Bennis, let me start with you. Let's talk about this trip. This is one of those trips that, in many people's minds, it puts the secretary in a quandary, no right, no wrong. How much is being run from the State Department? How much is truly being run from the White House?
I think it's very difficult to know exactly where that fine line is drawn. We know that Condoleezza Rice is closer to President Bush, certainly than her predecessor, Colin Powell. There was a picture, a very vivid picture of her on the front page of the New York Times this morning, looking visibly upset and angry in her public statement in Rome. But I think at the end of the day, she is the public face of this policy, and whether she privately disagrees with it or not is profoundly irrelevant, given the damage that this policy is doing in the Middle East and globally in terms of how the U.S. is viewed around the world and what its policies are doing to the world. So I think that if she actually does disagree with this policy, if it's being run by Cheney and the neocons against the advice of the realists on the other side, if you will, she has an obligation to resign in protest. Without that, it's profoundly irrelevant historically whether she has any private disagreements or not, just as it was with Colin Powell.
How much is the perception, because as you say, we don't know for sure, that she is in lockstep with almost everything this president says? How much does that truly hurt her status?
I think, ironically, it helps her status as a viable agent of U.S. policy. There can certainly be no question raised about Condoleezza Rice, as there was about Colin Powell. Does he really speak for this president? I don't think anyone doubts that. So when she speaks with great authority because of that longstanding personal relationship that George Bush has gone out of his way to promote. Having said that, it means that the impact of this policy is far more important in terms of how people perceive our entire country. And unfortunately, our entire people are held accountable for this policy because it is seen as representing the essence of what the U.S. policy is.
Ms. Felix, let me turn my attention to you and ask you the idea of, here is a woman that's truly seen as a Renaissance woman. She has a varied interest, yet on the other end, she is a very hard line when it comes to the idea of being a woman taken seriously in a, quote, man's world. How much has this been a problem for her historically, and do you see that as problematic in her dealings today?
Well, since she has aligned herself with the Bush administration, working first on the Security Council for the first Bush president, George Sr., she has made herself very comfortable within this particular group of leaders, as Phyllis described them, the neocons who she has really been very much in close affiliation with as far as her policy outlook, the way that she has evolved her career as a policymaker. So this hard-line stance really follows so well with the others with whom she's made her career, and I don't think that she has had to fight that sort of fight of being more of a dove or having a stance on these all of these foreign policies that she now is actually claiming throughout the world. She hasn't had to do that kind of fight because she hasn't had a very different type of outlook to try to defend within the White House or within this administration.
Do you think that she takes on the mantle of stepping up, being a trailblazer for women, and particularly in her position as Secretary of State, dealing with men and nations that don't always take, quote, women seriously? Do you think that she enjoys that?
Well, I think just by the very nature of her personality, that's something that is automatically going to happen because she has had experience in this through her first position, of course, with the Security Council, and then being the National Security Advisor for George W. She's had to meet some very headstrong characters, of course, especially in the former Soviet Union, and she made quite a reputation for herself by being able to stand up to them. I don't think that she has deliberately gone out and tried to prove in certain deliberate ways that because she's a woman, she's able to still demand a lot of respect for her field and for her status in foreign policy. I think that's just the way Condoleezza Rice is as a person, and she does not seem to be very dedicated to making some sort of statement about being a woman in her position. It's always been what her policy is and what her position is, and her personality has always been very, very confident and not one to think that she has to defend her gender in order to apply it to what her status or what her power should be.
Ms. Bennis, Condoleezza Rice has been fiercely loyal to not only this president, but their family, working with, as you suggested earlier, her father. Talk to me about her legacy and what the drag may be, if you will, if indeed the Bush administration continues down this track and polls are to be believed, one might think the legacy of this Bush administration might not be as grand as hoped, I'm sure, when he took office.
You know, Ed, it's interesting that you use the term legacy. I had just written that word on my notebook here, and I was thinking that with all due respect to Antonia's important work, I think it's clear that the legacy of Condoleezza Rice is not going to be as a powerful African-American woman in this overwhelmingly white male world of diplomacy, but her legacy, I think, is going to be her standing up internationally before the world while old people and children and UN peacekeepers are being slaughtered and saying, it's not time for a ceasefire. We don't want a ceasefire. That is going to be her legacy. I don't think there's any question about that. And I think in that context, she is going to be seen as a powerful representative of the policies that this administration has imposed on the world. The questions of whether she privately disagreed, whether it was going to be the toughest day of her life, as Colin Powell said years later, doesn't matter. It doesn't matter to the people who have died.
Did you find that?
It doesn't matter to us.
Did you find it surprising that she took that stance based on much of the world suggesting, sometimes for the first time, that this retaliation from Israel was reckless at best?
No, I wasn't surprised. This is very consistent with the Bush administration's strategy. I think that when we look at what Israel is trying to do on a regional basis, which is to essentially wipe out any possible present or future challenge, any possible future resistance to their domination of the region, it very closely matches the U.S. policy on a global level of doing exactly the same thing. It could have been written in the language of the 2002 U.S. National Security Strategy document, which outlines a notion of a new world in which no nation or group of nations could ever imagine that they might stand as equals, let alone challenge U.S. policy anywhere in the world. Israel is doing that in the regional level, the U.S. is doing it at the global level, and those two policies fit together very, very well. So Condoleezza Rice's defense of that no ceasefire military approaches are the only relevant things until we say it's time to stop is very consistent.
Ms. Felix, let me take you back to the personal side of this woman very quickly, if you will, and that is being a, I don't know, some might say a reluctant role model for African Americans to some degree. In a 2005 column, Eugene Robinson asked the question, how did she come to a worldwide or a worldview so radically different from that of most black Americans? Bill Fletcher, former leader of Trans Africa Forum, suggested that she's very cold and distant and only black by accident. Do you think that these are unfair criticisms?
Well, they're certainly not. These are certainly very widespread criticisms that we hear from many, many people. And according to my research and people I've talked to during working on my biography and since it came out, I've learned that she has been a conservative for a very long time, not just since she started to get it into studying international relations in college, but she has had a conservative stance that really does not represent the majority of blacks in this country at all. I mean, from the last statistics I'm looking at, only about 11% of black Americans consider themselves Republicans.
Yeah.
So she has always stood out from that, and her reasons, she has several different reasons for choosing the Republican Party, but yes, that has always made her, I must say, somewhat of an anomaly as far as a very leading figure, along with of course, Colin Powell being a Republican, but that has put her in a very odd situation as far as the American women and American the American black community wanting to stand behind her and look at her as sort of an icon for particular issues, because that's not going to happen with her, and she's certainly not apologetic about that not happening with her.
An interesting study to say the least. Phyllis Bennis is a new internationalism fellow at the Institute of Policy Studies in Washington, D.C., and Antonio Felix is author of Condi, the Condoleezza Rice Story. I thank you both. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Coming is Bush taking the country in the right direction, and former NFL star Lynn Swann gets a presidential endorsement, but will it hurt his bid to be Pennsylvania's first black governor? Those topics and more coming up on the Roundtable.